not the Doctor.
It's clobbering time.
Endgame.
Shazam!
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, issue 64. Here we are once again. I hope everybody's doing good, everybody's staying healthy. Thank you for downloading, subscribing, and checking us out. This is Heroes Asylum. I am Mike, and here is Kane.
Hi, everybody.
How good you doing afternoon. Today, my friend?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing awesome, awesome. You enjoying your quarantine time or trying to make it as enjoyable as possible?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good over here.
Are you?
Some of us are better than others, but I think I'm just still recovering from our little
we try to do at least a couple of times throughout the week. We try to do a little get together with a bunch of friends on Zoom, do a trivia game, try to watch along. Last night was just like a bullshit, you know, we're just having fun, just talking, catching up, and some people in vibe on drinks that last night, and so there was some humorous situation, like that's all I can say.
There's video out there of this too. There's proof out there on the internet.
I am the keeper of the video, and I will hold on to it. But guys, I just want to thank you for downloading us. There's a million podcasts out there, especially right now. People like just are sitting at home with microphones on their phone, just doing a podcast. So thank you for checking us out. We've been doing this for a while. We're not quarantine podcasters. So don't take of us that way. So what we're going to do, here's the time we're going to talk about the latest news, comic book movie news, comic book news, sci-fi geekdom, everything. So check us out on heroesasylum.com. But what we're going to start this week again, two memorials actually this week. So we're going to go ahead and jump into that and just give a moment of silence for two folks that were actually very big in any geek community, really. The first one was Morris Mort Drucker. Mort was a self-taught cartoon legend who basically he was the main hand behind Mad Magazine. He died in his home. He was 91 years old. Just felt ill, was nothing to do with the COVID-19, thankfully. So, you know, just don't think of that. That's what this is. He was just old, just had felt ill in the last week. And that was pretty much it. So, yeah, it was a big part of my growing up. I don't know about you, Kane.
Big time.
So, yeah, he was definitely a big part of my childhood. I couldn't tell you how many other people out there, comedians, directors, geeks all around, nerds all around. Mad Magazine was our magazine to spoof. You know, before I knew what spoofing was and what, like, Airplane and the Naked Gun series were, this is where I learned about spoofing. You know, I think it sticks out the best for me was, like, their A-Team issue.
Hysterical.
Hysterical.
They did everything. Knight Rider. I think I saw a cover recently. They did Smallville.
Yeah.
He did everything.
And yeah, Mad Magazine still continued. Not only that, but he was also part of Mad Magazine into the entertainment field, into the movies and television series. When Mad started doing, if anybody remembers Mad TV on, I think it was Fox at the time.
Yeah.
Big names came out of that. Then you had the Mad movie series. There was a few Mad movie series. I think Up the Creek was one of them, which I loved Up the Creek.
I remember that's an older one too.
Mad started delving into the movie genre like 70s 80s, and then they kind of like slowed down a little bit, but yeah. So guys, you know, big bag of wind goes out to Mort Drucker. He will be missed. I don't believe he has been working in a while, but he definitely it was a major impact in a lot of lives out there.
Yep. One of the pioneers. Rest in peace, sir.
Next one actually is this one surprised me. I haven't heard from her in a long, long time, but Honor Blackman. If nobody's familiar with Honor Blackman, she was Kathy Gale in The Avengers, the 1962 to 64 British show, as well as a Bond girl. She was Pussy Galore from Goldfinger. She was also in Jason and the Argonauts, 1963. So she's had a pretty big career. Again, not related to to the passing or with COVID-19. So it's a good something to at least, you know, she wasn't suffering from that. And it does look like if you look back in her record, she was not only was a fashion icon, sex symbol, but she was a singer. And one of her hit songs, I wish I could have found it. I wasn't able to find it, but it's called Kinky Boots. So Ooh. Do yourself a favor, guys. Look for it.
Look up Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots. But yeah, I mean, just the Bond girl. If you talk about a Bond girl, she is normally the Bond girl, especially when it comes to the tongue in cheek kind of names that the Bond girls had.
Yeah, that was the beginning of it, I believe, was Pussy Galore. And then went from there. You had a couple other ones after that. I'm trying to think of their names.
Well, you had Christmas.
Octopussy, right? Was one.
Yeah, well, she, yeah. But you had, like, you know, Christmas from Pierce Brosnan. You know,
oh, God.
Christmas did come twice a year.
Christmas yeah. comes.
So, yeah, I mean, she definitely was not the first Bond girl, but definitely an icon. The first one, maybe she was the first Bond girl. I definitely will say she fell into the most famous one, but you had Pussy Galore, Vianna Philop.
Vianna Philop, there's
Vesper Lynn. You know, there's just so many different names out there. But yeah, she will definitely be missing. Again, like I said, the Avengers. If nobody's ever watched the Avengers, not the Marvel Avengers, but the 1960s, it's a spy espionage show. Really good. Show to watch.
You know, fun. A nice little fun show.
Yeah, I think what they did in 1990s, I think there was a remake of it.
Yeah, with Uma Thurman, I think.
Yeah, as well, but I was I was surprised to see that her name pop up and a little bit upset. But so guys, it's a moment of silence and a big bag of wind for those two. All right, guys. So next, what we're going to jump into is our admissions ward. Our mission ward is our news section where we sit down, we break down any news, rumors. It's kind of slow right now. So, because pretty much, and Kane and I were talking about this. I know he's got one like it, but pretty much everybody's reporting that, this has been delayed. This has been delayed. Yeah, no shit. Everything's been delayed. My life's been delayed. So, yeah, we understand everything's been delayed. So, a lot of news lately is a lot of that. But there are other new news, things moving forward that we can kind of report on. So we're going to go ahead and cover that. We're going to do that. Like I said, that will be our admissions ward.
News from the admissions ward.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and let Kane take over since I sort of did the memorial. Go ahead. So Kane, can I have his turn?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. I guess this is a twofer. Matt Reeves says that he won't rewrite the Batman during the hiatus. And the big thing about he wants to explore Bruce Wayne's humanity in the Batman, which, we all know this is going to be a year two Batman, not going to be a Batman further in his years, which it's kind of disappointing, but, I've come to terms with it. I think a lot of people have. So I'll just take it for what it is. And he wants to explore the humanity of Bruce Wayne, which I find interesting.
Well, that kind of goes in what they were talking about, how it was they're delving more into the detective side, and that's going to be your more human side. I mean, if you really, when you think about detective stories, it's about the humanity of that person trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, it's Batman's human. There's always a human side to Batman. So I think that's a kind of strange side.
Yeah. It's a little odd thing.
It's if we were talking about Superman or Wonder Woman, we're going to explore the human side of them. Gotcha. There's something different going on here.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there are more gods, but Batman's already human. Okay. So what are we going to explore? Is he still dealing with his trauma? It was parents' death. I mean, what's going on? I mean,
yeah, especially if he's at year two, they're having no Robins. So it's, again, the same. I hate to say it, but it sounds very similar to the scarred child still getting over the death of his parents. It's just a rehash of every other Batman we've seen.
And we saw it already in Batman Begins, which is like
everywhere. We've seen it in all the Batman. That's his driving force. So I understand that's his driving force to begin with, but he eventually does get over that, and he does what he does because it's for the good, because he's still pining over his parents.
Yeah, I get a little sick of that when I keep seeing the Waynes die, where he's always doing this. Oh, my dad, my mom, like, okay, We think we know already. Let's move forward.
Yeah.
Let's see what you can do. But
I'm really looking forward to it. I'm glad to hear that he's not. I hope a lot of people aren't doing that, taking more time to revisit the stories that they're working on, because I'm a big believer in you go with your gut, your first response, your first, not draft, but you really what you're putting out there to begin with. Let that breathe. Let it become life. Don't sit there and second guess yourself, because if you do, you're going to sit there and second guess yourself over and over and over again. And I've heard so many stories of musicians that I think a good one out there, Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre's been working on an album for a decade because he feels it's not good enough yet. That thing's never going to see the light of day. Because he's second guessing himself every bit, and that man should not. And I think same thing applies for Reeves. He should just go with his gut, go with what everybody said. Hey, that's a good thing. Let's sign you up to do this movie. Let's stick to that.
Yeah, I'm just hopefully he doesn't tinker with that script. I mean, apparently it's pretty good. I mean, if you got all the actors that he's gotten, you know, they're world class actors, and they say the script's good. You know, don't touch it. Yeah. Just go forward. Like,
I mean, because I can see on the set kind of changing. Hey, you know, I don't think he would say it in this moment. You know, the actors putting their 2 cents in. I can definitely see, you know, a slight change there, but not like a rewrite or anything. Especially because they were a couple months into the production, weren't they?
Yeah, they were like a month in.
Month in. Okay, so yeah, I mean, you got a month in, so you don't want to mess that up.
You had some set photos, yeah. So yeah, they were knee deep. So. But we'll check that out. That should be coming out next year, June 2021. What do you have for us, Captain? Very nice.
And I guess we can talk about the elephant in the room right now that's been like all over Twitter. Ezra Miller, the shocking, and I'm putting my hands up, shocking fan attack video that's been all over Twitter, all over the place. According to Variety, it's a hit or miss sometimes. I know it's a big name, but we do have Variety does hit or miss every once in a while. The altercation apparently took place April 1st at 2020 at 6 p.m. And I will completely butcher the hell out of these places, but it is in Iceland that he was at. It was at a bar. Based on the graffiti covering the walls, it's in the background. It appears that the fight happened at the back entrance of this pub. The eyewitnesses revealed that it started when the actor was confronted by some overeager fans, which included the woman in the video. Miller stated that Miller started to lose his temper, particularly at the said lady. And the next thing we see is the incident where, you know, it just broke out. Me personally watching this video, I think it's a joke. I think people are overreacting. They are looking for something to talk about right now, because if there's nothing else to talk about, I don't know. I just don't feel that was an attack. The body language on both of them did not show aggravation, didn't show fear. I used to be a bouncer at a bar for years in not just recently, but also in my youth. I was a bouncer at a bar downtown in Orlando for a couple of years as well. I see fights. There's something about a fight. You can see the body language. You can see the tension between it. There was none of that. The other thing I think that sticks out for me is we haven't heard from either party.
No, nobody, especially the woman that was attacked.
Yeah. If this lady was attacked, she'd be like up in arms going, sue that, you know, but I just don't see it. The only thing that showed any like urgency was the guy. I'm assuming it was the guy that was recording it. I couldn't tell, but you hear a man's voice going, "Whoa, dude, whoa, whoa," you know, something along those lines. And it's the only voice that sounded like of urgency. Even Ezra's voice didn't sound like,
yeah, you know, for an actor, the lady was smiling when she went down. It was just strange.
And being an actor, you would think he would act a little bit better than that, because that was the worst acting.
That was awful.
What, yeah. You want to come get some?
It was, yeah, it just looks so staged. Like, you want some? Like, come on, I could beat up Ezra Miller.
It was done April 1st. So I just, there's just too many like little red flags, I don't think. And I think the media, social media, not media itself, but social media and everybody else. Just
They're bored. They need something to report on. So that's pretty much what you're going with right now. And, I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah, and I just see more and more of these news articles, all news places going, "Oh, they're going to recast, or it's canceling Flash now." Da, da, da. I was like, he's still going to be out there. He's still going to do Flash. That he's still, I think he's just preparing to start, or was, I think why he was in Iceland was that he was out there to do the new Fantastic Beast, the third, you know, of that series. So I just think it's gotten so blown out of proportion.
Yeah, it looks silly, so enough. It's just like, come on.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do you got next for us?
Hey, guess what? Taika Waititi offers hints about Love and Thunder and Korg's love life, and we're going to get space sharks, Captain. Space sharks are coming to Love and Thunder, even though I think it's one of the worst titles ever made. But hey, they're coming. And I guess we're going to explore the rock creature Korg's love life, which... who is he in love with? Maybe the creature from the Neverending Story, the big rock guy. Is that what it is? Maybe that dude. They got a thing going.
They are opening up to different sexualities. So maybe that is. I mean, that maybe Korg's alternate sexual preference is a rock dude.
Yeah, why not? Hey.
Could even be the transforming rocks that we grew up with. Those little plate the transforming.
Oh rocks. Yeah. Could be after one of them. It could and be that, one and of that those.
Would be a crossover for a multi-universe extension. Hence, opening up for the mad multi-universe of madness. For Doctor Strange, it's all connecting. I'm not looking forward to James Foster as Thor, but I'm looking forward to seeing what direction they take. It's Tycho. He's done amazing jobs on a lot of things. I'm looking forward to it. And it's not so much, the more I think about it, it's not so much that it's Jane Foster and, yes, that was probably one of the worst selling Thor runs in the comic book ever. She hasn't been there. It's just very strange that you're going to bring her back into the folds and base this whole thing off of her when she's like pretty much just been MIA since Thor 2.
Yeah. Where's she been?
well, we know where she's been. Her Loki and Thor make that comment, that, oh no, it was amicable. We separated. And I don't know. It just seems like a strange thing to bring her in. I'm not a fan of female Thor. Never have been.
Some people swear by it too, which is kind of crazy. But yet, when you offered the stats, like the lowest selling Thor title ever.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I mean,
and Thor has had some pretty weird titles. And that's the lowest selling one.
Yeah, and I'm gonna put up some red flags and get some people angry. I mean, I think it's just that people that the ones that are pro female in characters want to see that. That's great. I want to see great female characters. You do too. We've talked about this 100 times. Mm-hmm. Just make it, don't sex change them. Don't genderify them. Just make a female character. There are so many great Asgardian characters you could have done a movie off of. I think it was lazy writing on Marvel. I don't know the writer that did it, but to give Jane Foster the Thor, mantle. And again, if you ever read it, she does the thous and these and she talks like Thor. You don't get the hammer and become Thor. You get Thor's powers. You don't start, quoting him. And it just throws me off.
It's a little strange. I mean, I'm not, am I a fan of it? No. I mean, I'm looking forward to Taika coming back. I mean, that's great. I think one of the best things he did was Ragnarok, kind of re-energized that series and basically played the Chris Hemsworth strengths, which, Chris Hemsworth's a pretty funny guy, and just allowed Chris Hemsworth to be him and then while still being Thor at the same time. And according to him also, I didn't say this, is the rumors of Fat Thor coming back, I guess, are not going to happen. So I guess we're going to see bulky, sexy Chris Hemsworth come back. So
the throwback on, are they not the throwback, but the pushback on that was quite bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's probably been a couple of years that he's gotten on Jenny Craig and he's looking better now.
Yeah.
He just, and what about Korg's? Nothing, just that he might have a...
No, he's just going to have a love life. That's about it. He's going to have a love life or a love interest or a past. So okay. I just wonder how they're going to delve into that.
He did talk about children, if I remember correctly, in Ragnarok. And I believe in the history of that character, if you've ever watched or read it, the World War Hulk, which kind of where Korg came from, he did have children. He did have a family. In World War Hulk, he had to battle his brother, you know, during one of the arena battles. So, I mean, if they're pulling from that, that'd be kind of cool, you know, to say, yes, he was on this mission to do what he thought was right, and his family got left behind, and now he's done, and he's going to see his family again. I think that'd be great, cool if they dealt that route.
They got a lot of cool things going on with this film, you know, with Taika returning. Yeah, Christian Bale, come on, as the villain. That excites the hell out of me. Because, you know, Christian Bale, we all know him for Batman Begins and tons of other movies, but well, he's played bad guys before. So I'm being interested to see, number one, who's going to play. Hopefully they don't CGI him. You don't want to CGI Christian Bale. You want to make him, you know, if you're going to hire the dude, you want him to be there. So, you know, so you can
see
him.
We've talked about this before. I think it'd be fine to CGI him. He'll do a great job. Whether, you know, it's about the actor and his portrayals. We've seen some amazing actors where you don't see their face. You know,
true.
I mean, if we go back to V for Vendetta, you know, would be the perfect example.
Hugo Weaving, yeah, that was all, I mean, just all voice. Actor, all voice.
So I think with Christian Bale, you just make sure you're just using him for the right thing. If whether he's covered up or not, that's fine with me. I don't need to see him. I know you've got a Batman hard on and you want to see another Batman in Marvel. I completely get that.
We almost got all of them, man. We got We had Keaton. Now we got Bale. Got to find a way to get Kilmer in there too.
Yeah,
just you know, maybe George Clooney through a side view. I don't know.
All right, so guys, for me, Clone Wars, Star Wars, is almost over. If you guys haven't gotten into this, which somebody I know has not gotten into this, we're at the final season and we're at the last four episodes. It started off with the Bad Batch, talked about a group of bad clones. Basically, they were genetically non-desirable, but they were a group of misfits. Basically, we get to see them, we get to see some of the old faces, we get to see Rex, we get to see Echo, and then we drift into the middle arc, which was all about Ahsoka. Where's she been? What happened right after she left the order? She gets tied up with a couple of sisters, the Martez sisters. They get tied up with the Pikes. If anybody remembers, the Pikes were brought up in Solo. We've dealt with the Pikes before in Clone Wars. But the Pikes are also tied in with the Shadow Syndicate, which, if you guys remember from the earlier stuff for Clone Wars, was
season Darth two.
Syndicate was later. Yeah, the
Shadow. Oh, okay. Shadow
Syndicate was actually created by Maul. Before that, it was the Pikes. It was I'm just drawing a blank on the other name. There's a bunch of he basically just another bunch of gangs that were together. And when Maul became the head of, if you guys remember from Clone Wars, he killed. Satine, became the ruler of Mandalore, but put a Mandalorian figurehead in place so he could still maintain power, but not be the figurehead where everybody knew, but he worked the underground. Hmm. And that's where we left off with him. But the last four episodes basically are what has been referred to a lot in The Mandalorian.
The fall of the Mandalorian.
The siege of Mandalore.
Yeah, that's
what we're going to see. So if anybody's a fan of the Mandalore, you really want to get caught up on the Clone Wars, especially for this season, because the last four episodes are nothing but the siege of Mandalore. We see what's going on with Maul. We see what's going to happen with Satine. We also get to see Ursa Sabine, if you guys remember from Rebels. Sabine's mother, she's in here. So there's this is an interweaving the last four episodes, because you've got the connection to Rebels, you've got the connection to Star Wars, the first three movies, not the original trilogy, but the early trilogies, and then you've got the connection straight into the Mandalorian. So this is just, and also Solo, Star Wars story, because I think Solo takes place a little bit after this. So you got a lot of things going on. So just definitely get caught up. Check this out. Also, read. There's a comic book series called Darth Maul, The Son of Dathomir. Read that. That'll get you guys all kind of blended in. But make sure you guys check that out. It's been a great, great season. I've been doing a watch along on our channel here. And if anybody's wanted to check that out, jump on there. But the technology was great in the last time we saw Clone Wars. Now it's even better. I mean, just the hair.
It looks better. Yeah, it does. I've seen a couple clips here and there. And sadly, I'm the guy that Catherine is talking about who has not seen this season of Clone Wars is this idiot right here on the other side of the microphone. I have not caught it. I have no excuses. I fail. But I will start
checking. Just the quality of the background characters, not just the actual characters themselves.
Now,
to watch the background stuff, because beforehand, the background stuff was a lot of times it was like the same alien just kind of walking around.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now it's true. Like specific stuff. The episode, this latest episode was Together Again. The one before that was Dangerous Debt. It literally is a complete throwback to New Hope. You have pretty much every alien that was in the cantina scene from New Hope. In there, like they're just wandering around the background of this prison. And you're like, oh, hey, I remember. Oh shit, I remember him. So yeah, it's a good, nice little throwback for Star Wars geeks.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. So do you see any? You think in the next four episodes we're gonna see like maybe some hints to the Mandalorian? I mean, they showed that.
No, I don't think it's gonna. I don't think we're going to see him specifically.
They showed that one scene in the Mandalorian, like season one, where it shows a flashback of the siege of Mandalore, where a Mandalorian saves him. So I'm just wondering if we're gonna see.
I don't think we're gonna see it. Okay. We're going to see the siege. We definitely are going to see the siege. We're not going to pinpoint to go. That's the Mandalore, right? We're not gonna see a kid doing it. It's just. I don't think they're gonna like feed in that directly. I think it's just going to be, we're going to see the Siege of Mandalore of something that's been talked about so much, just like the Clone Wars, you know, in the beginning of the Clone Wars, which was like, oh my God, what is this thing? Oh, what is it? And, you know, eventually the Siege of Mandalore started coming up in like just stories. Nobody ever knew what the Siege of Mandalore is. And we're finally going to see what happens here.
I hope it's cool. I hope it's cool. Hope they don't, but you know.
Well, it's got, I mean, it's Filoni for starters. It's tying in pretty much directly into Mandalore, itself, because you're going to see the dark saber, but Maul has the saber now. So we're going to find out what happens. How does he lose it? What goes on? And maybe see the transition from this to, and I wish I could remember the guy's name that has it at the final minute of
I think it's one. Lance Gideon or Gideon is his name.
Gideon. Maybe we'll find out that he gets it, because he talks about getting that soul, getting the saber during the Siege of Mandalore. So there's going to be a lot of crossovers happening through this, and I know a lot of the stories are. I've seen some of the articles I see out there so misleading that Maul will be in Mandalore. No, he won't. He was killed
he's dead
before New Hope. So, but it's just funny. Like these people are trying to like. I was like, do you guys even watch Star Wars? Just asking. You're saying shit, but I don't know if you're really watching it.
No, it's one of those things that they just kind of make up stuff. You know. They just grab stuff out of the sky. There's like,
but yeah, definitely check it, because this will again connect the Solo story, the Mandalorian story, continuation of.
I just hope the explanation is better than the Kessel Run. You know, that's what I'm afraid of.
I think it will be better, because it's again, we're talking Filoni. I mean, you just imagine, just realize what he has done seven seasons of the Clone Wars, and how many things he has answered, how many things he's brought to light, how many great characters that he's come up. I don't think he's gonna, you know, goof up on the last four things. This is his last, really, technically, I mean, other than being backup on Mandalore, this is his last hurrah. Yeah, you know, we don't know of him doing anything else other than being like a producer or co-producer on.
Well, I think he's writing in the writing room with
it. It's a mix. You really look at the writers and stuff, you'll see Filoni's name pop up once in a while.
He directed the pilot of The Mandalorian, so.
That was Favreau.
Oh, you sure about that? I thought it was him.
Mandalorian is Favreau's baby. You got to remember that. That is Favreau's baby. He does, you know, get, you know, Filoni involved a lot, but that is Favreau's baby, so yeah. We'll see. Like I said, I know you do it a lot. You're like, oh, you know, he's on Mandalorian. He's not as involved, but I think the people that are in charge are smart using him to further it, because he was the one that was handed the golden rod from Lucas to continue. You know,
he was
gifted, and he was basically, from my understanding, he was like given the Bible of, you know, this is what Lucas always wanted to go forward. So.
Yeah, he's one of the Lucas pupils, or he's Padawan.
So and again, guys, check that out. And I've also talked about it before, but right after this ends, you should pick up the Ahsoka novel and pick up, because that picks up just a little bit after the siege. And then what's kind of cool about Ahsoka's book is that fills in the gap between The Siege of Mandalore and Rebels. So you'll see, you know, it just builds up. So it all, it's an all continuing story for you guys.
It all ties in together.
All right. So what do you got next, sir?
I got Ahmed Best says the new Star Wars projects lack faith in the mythology. Basically saying that they, the one of the things that when they're doing these new Star Wars movies is they don't have faith in using the Force. And a lot of the times when you see it, they don't. Like, you know, the latest trilogy that came out, they hinted at it, but, you know, they kind of messed it up with the third one. Like, where was it going? I think if you put Force Awakens and you put The Rise of Skywalker as, you know, two films, I think it makes sense. But you get that middle film, which I like Last Jedi. But I guess what they're trying to hint, I'm just saying, is like, they're not using the Force as much. Maybe they don't believe in it. They want to do other stuff. And interesting. Because I think they are using the Force a lot, which is strange.
I don't know what Jar Jar's talking about. Misa confused.
Misa very confused.
Because if you watch, it's only two people, only really, well, three, four Force users, but two are old, one's not really using the power anymore, except, you know, one of the biggest times she does use it, people lose their shit about the Mary Poppins scene. You see a young girl just learning the Force. Obviously, you know, Rey's not going to use it during the first one. She used it a little bit. That one I don't get. I'm not sure what he's thinking. I mean, especially, I mean, if he thinks back to his movies, the Anakin Child trilogy, yeah, there, of course there was Force users everywhere because they were Force users everywhere. Yeah, I'm not sure on what he's...
Misa very confused.
Yeah, he's smoking the ganja. Yeah, that's...
Lay off the ganja, sure Ahmed. Lay off the ganja, and, sir.
Yeah, where he's going with that one. That's an interesting quote, to say the least.
Well, you know, it's Ahmed Best. It is Jar Jar, so...
Yeah, I mean, he's been actually... And most people don't realize that he was actually Jar Jar in most of the Clone Wars.
It's just strange. The quote for him is if saying the lack of faith in the mythology is really the thing I find to be missing.
Yeah, that line I can see. I don't agree with it, but that kind of does make sense because it is something that you have said that they don't, you say that they don't intertwine enough. And that almost sounds kind of like what he's saying, that their lack of faith in the what was the quote again?
Oh, hold on. I have it right here. It's pulled up in my Evernote. Thank you very much. It is the lack of faith in mythology.
In mythology. Like they feel like
is really the thing that he finds to be missing, which is, you know, strange because I think that, you know, like the new series itself involves the Force. So
it does. Well, and you know what? Maybe what he's really talking about is the mythology of the Jedi and they're breaking away from it. Just like Luke was saying, the Jedi must die. So maybe that's why he's upset that they're not following the Jedi way anymore, and that they're saying that what the Jedi's did and what their path was bad. It's the only thing I could think of that he would be really aiming, you know, gearing towards with that kind of quote. So
that's strange, and you know, we'll probably get a series on Disney Plus about the Force, which hopefully will be Knights of the Old Republic. Please, please, please. But we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see something. I'm sure. I mean, we're not seeing the end of it. You know, I know I just made the comment about, you know, Filoni not having a project right now. They're gonna find him a project. His abilities and his knowledge and just the way he writes a story, they're gonna get him a project. Whether, you know, I would love to see him get a movie. I mean, to be honest.
Oh yeah.
And you know, just delve into a movie, I think would be amazing. But if they give him another animated, you know, series, I'm all on board with that. I think, you know, again, what he did for Clone Wars and how much he opened up that one sentence Obi-Wan said, and created this massive place. You know, he I know he didn't write every single, you know, story, but he probably, you know, was a big part of the overlying arc that's going on through the whole thing. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
It should be interesting
doing something
going forward. I want to see him definitely do something. Mine like that, you don't want to waste it.
No, definitely not.
And oh, by the way,
that's why Filoni is I think that's why not Filoni.
By the way, I hate to correct you, but Dave Filoni did actually direct the first episode of The Mandalorian.
Okay, yep. Maybe then was Favreau writing it?
John Favreau wrote it.
Okay,
along with two others, but he did direct the pilot.
Okay, all right, then. So at least he does something live.
Yeah, so he's got that on his belt. So maybe a future live action movie down the pike for him. Hopefully, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Let's hope. So my last one, and actually I'm surprised you didn't. Well, I'm the Superman fan, so I guess I you've started with Batman, we're gonna end with Superman.
As it should
the
be.
The casting of Lana Lane has come out and they have officially updated the DC cast list for Superman and Lois, which should be coming out later this year. And you know, of course we do have, you know, Tyler Hulks for Clark Kent, Elizabeth Tulich for Lois Lane. Announced was actually Emmanuel, I'm going to butcher her name, sorry about that, Krichik for Lana Lane Cushing. This girl has been in Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, good movie, or good show, Forever Night, another good one, and Are You Afraid of the Dark, another good one. She has also been in Entourage, Murder in the First. So she will be coming in as she's married to a loan officer in a Smallville bank, and she reconnects with Clark. Her husband will be played by Eric Valdez. He's from a General Hospital, Graceland. Again, he's going to be the husband to Lana. We also have Sam Lane, Lois's father, Dylan Walsh. Will be on here.
Oh, Dylan Walsh, Nip and Tuck, yeah.
You know, Blue Blood. Oh. So he will be on here. Walsh is an army general, will be a workaholic, kind of the same trope we've seen for him, which I'm glad, because I've seen other versions of Sam Lane where he wasn't in the army, and I thought it was very strange. He's that's kind of got to be the back and forth for between him and Superman, you know.
Yeah, but I guess in this series they're gonna it's gonna be known that General Lane knows that he's Superman, right? That's one of the big things.
I don't know yet. I haven't seen anything. America Safe. Lane has never been known for comic relief, and Walsh will be a solid. Nothing says about him knowing that. Walsh was actually part of the recasting.
Yeah, because a lot of these characters appeared in Supergirl. So
Moreshore was the original one. It looks like that was for it.
What is too bad? Michael Ironside's a little bit too old. I thought he played. Didn't he play General Lane in Lois and Clark?
I believe so. Yeah, I think he did.
He was so good. I liked him as Smallville. Was it Smallville or was it Lois and Clark? I forgot.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that.
Maybe it was one of those two. I know he was on there definitely.
And this casting actually answers a few of our questions. For Jonathan Kent, well, Clark and Lois's wonderful Lois's son is Jordan Ellis. He's been known for, he was in Hulu, Little Fires Everywhere. He's in his teens, and he is one of the two kids, seemingly a twin to the brother of Jordan. Jonathan is more clean cut, but they show Jordan Kent, they show the actor as a younger actor. So I don't know if something happened in their travel from Argo back.
Because it wasn't like when the travel from Argo, that it wasn't even mentioned. It was just Jonathan. That was it. And then like during the crossover, you had that one thing where, you know, Superman's talking to Lois and he says, hey, you need to get back. You know, the boys, you know, they need you. Yeah. That was the first mention of it. And I'm like, the boys?
Yeah. They're showing a picture of Jordan, and Jordan, who's playing Jonathan, it's just kind of confusing. Jonathan Kent is in his teens, but when they show the picture of Jordan Kent, Alexander Garfin, he's a young kid. So like young, when I'm saying like 6-7, oh, they're almost like a decade apart.
Strange. I wonder what they're going for. So it's kind of odd.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how they're doing it. They're showing that, you know,
isn't Jordan supposed to be like, okay, from the description I read, I'm not sure if you read it, they say Jonathan's going to be more of the jock, and then like Jordan's going to be more of like the introvert, the geeky kid.
We were talking about him, but he's a loner who enjoys video games, but probably not Superman's Nintendo 64 version. He's a more temperament, social, with a social anxiety. So he's like the complete, he's Clark basically, and kind of Jonathan is the Superman ego, if you look at him. So there's no comic book connection to Jordan, so he's really a myth. Jonathan, of course, everybody, if anybody's a comic book fan, knows Jonathan was the father of Clark, but when Lois and Clark did actually have a son, they named him Jonathan. So we're
surprised that they didn't go, they didn't give any of them like their Kryptonian names. Like maybe they do.
They might, but when you're casting right now, you just want
to. I know. I'm just thinking outside the box. Like you would think, like he named one after his Earth father, then maybe he could name something after
maybe
his
Jordan. Real. Maybe that's what it is, Jordan.
Maybe Jordan, it is. Jordan, you know what?
Jor-El.
Maybe Jordan Jor-El. Yeah, okay.
I could kind of see that going there. Right. So yeah, we'll find out more. But yeah, there's definitely an age gap. So maybe that will get explained from Argo to.
You know, it's funny. We have never. I mean, since this series has actually, it's been red lit. I think it's 10 or 13 episodes. We haven't even talked about it yet at all. We've just talked about castings.
That's really all it's been out
there. Speculation. I'm wondering how they're going to do this because this is the Superman. There's like, it's going to be Lois and Clark basically, but he's Superman and they're struggling with like, you know, two teenage boys or whatever.
Yeah. But, like I said, doesn't look like two teenage boys now. So,
or yeah, it's not that now, but you know,
yeah, but I don't know because there hasn't been much and I'm liking it that there's such a tight lip on here other than the fact of the casting. Is all we really know. So it's
kinda, well, they haven't even mentioned like the villain of the first season yet. Like we don't know anything.
Yeah, again, that's perfect. I got no problems with that. I don't need to know
who's that new villain that
when that game out was Lois and Clark back in the day. I didn't. You know, we knew who that there would be a Lex, but we just watched it. And guess what? I'm just gonna watch this. Surprise me.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see how they're gonna do. I mean, do you think we see Metallo? Like they throw some of the old favorites.
We're gonna see everything. Yeah, we're gonna see. It's Superman. No, they're gonna bring in Aquaman's villains. Yes, we're gonna see Metallo, Mr. Mixaplex. I mean, that's. I mean, what villains do you think we're gonna see? Yes, we're gonna see we're probably gonna see some of the real versions of what we've seen in Supergirl. Because you think Supergirl used Zod a lot again. Of the same Superman villains, you know? Because yeah. Supergirl, most Supergirl villains are Batman or Superman villains too, so they just kind of interchange. So I think what we might see is more like the Superman versions of those, like the OG.
They should, you know what they should do? The canceled series Krypton, they should bring that Brainiac in. That was one of the best parts of that Krypton series was that their version of Brainiac.
It's all still DC, ran, so who knows? Maybe they'll say, hey, why don't you come in and do it? You know, maybe bring Lobo in, you know, something. So, you know, it can still be Lobo. Lobo's, you know, forever.
Alien, yeah, forever. So
you know, and since we're getting the space sharks in Love and Thunder, maybe we'll get our space dolphin. I mean, we got to have space dolphins, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I like the casting. I like what we're doing. I remember when they first initially announced the casting for the two kids. I was like, oh, okay. But originally, when they first announced the casting for the two kids, there was no talk of them both being Kents. The rumor was that one was going to be a Kent and one was going to be a Wayne.
And yeah, I heard that. I thought that
was a really cool idea. I was like, wow, are they going to try to do the, like I've tried to push on you to read it.
Super Sons,
you know, and it's because it's a fun book. It's just them.
I don't want Damien.
It's Damien. and just imagine Damien's grumpy ass self with a positive Superboy, you know, a Super Son. And just that tension that he's just got, it's just relentless positivity beating down on Damien, and their relationship, they sort of soften each other up a little bit. So you start seeing Damien like, okay, damn it. Okay. The kid's right. So, but yeah, that's what I originally heard. And I heard some rumors about that too. So I was but now that they're looking like they're different ages, we'll be interested to see what happens.
Yeah, check it out. I think it's going to come out sometime in the fall. Is that what you said?
That's the last I read. There's no premiere date yet. Of course, you know, with everything going on, everything's been kind of put on hold. It was originally supposed to be a fall release. You know, I'm thinking that we're probably not going to get a big crossover this year. So this.
Berlanti mentioned something. There will be a crossover, but it won't be as big.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means.
Well, maybe that's what I mean. I'm thinking it won't be as big, and maybe this will be the way they're. Okay, hey, we're not going to get Beg Crosser, but hey, you're also going to get Superman too. So,
well, they got Superman hopefully, now.
We'll get this over with. The quarantine will get out and everybody will get back up and running and we'll all be back to normal
soon, hopefully. Hopefully
so,
soon.
Do you have anything else left on
your? No, sir. That was the last I had.
All right. All right, guys, we really don't have a subject because there was a, you know, we're going to cover some news and stuff and like what little news we did have. But what we're going to cover now, we're going to jump in. There are no new comic book releases yet. So we were going to kind of like talk about things we've caught up on. I haven't really, I've pretty much been caught up. So what I'm doing is I'm like rehashing some old books I haven't picked. You know, I've been wanting to read to kind of just catch up on my reading. So we're going to kind of cover that here in the new segment we're calling Heroes Pulls. All right, Kane, did you you said you had a couple that you read?
I got an older one, and actually this is the hardcover one that you so graciously picked up for me. It is Marvel Man, aka Miracle Man.
You got a chance to finally read that one?
Yes, nice. I did, and I got to say this is a property like. Once again, I've talked about this book a while and this character. The way you think of him is like he's like Shazam, because he is. He's like Shazam, and there are like two versions of there's Miracle Man and there's Kid Miracle Man. Now, Kid Miracle Man was created basically to he idolized Miracle Man. He wanted to be just like him, but he got influenced, some dark powers, and he became Kid Miracle Man. And basically, he wiped out all of London. There's a great panel, issue 16, which I have not had the guts to buy yet.
That's not in there. I was wondering if
it's not in there. No, it's not, which it's unfortunate, but it's okay. I'm
the size of that book. I was like, man, that's gotta have it.
It doesn't have it. It doesn't have that panel that I have. Like I have issue 15, but issue 15 is basically the destruction of London. And you see like this great panel. I'm not sure if I ever sent it to you. It shows like these heads on pikes. Literally the Big Ben clock is destroyed. All of London is just destroyed because Miracle Man and Kid Miracle Man are just literally killing each other back and forth. And then issue 16 deals with the fact, like, what happens when Kid Miracle Man actually rules the world? Like, how does a god, basically, that you're terrified of, he's just ruling the world and there's nothing you can do. Reading this book again, it just brings back the memories. It's so good. It's Alan Moore at his, to me, at one of his peak and finest. For a while, I think rights were lost. I don't know. I'm not sure who has the rights right now. I'm not sure if it's Marvel or him, but this is one of those books that if you read Shazam, it's along those lines, but it's a lot different. I think it's a lot darker because basically when Billy Batson says Shazam, you know, you just see, you know, Shazam pop up, but where does Billy Batson go? And this deals with, you know, that alter ego of like when he says, you know, I'm Miracle Man, where does that human side go? And it shows like he's in space with these other things. And it's just, it's really, really well done. It's an Alan Moore book. Anything Alan Moore, I'm going to buy, or Jack Kirby. But yeah, Miracle Man, check it out. Alan Moore.
It's one of those ones I've been wanting to pick up. Like when I saw the book, I almost didn't get it for you. I almost kept it because I'm like, he keeps talking about reading it, about this. I want to read it. But I was like, no. He's like, let me get Kane this one because it might have the book he's looking for.
It is so good. So good. So good. I mean, I was turned on to this book years ago by the late, great John Schnepp when he did his Collider Heroes show. And he introduced this book and I was like, what is this book about? And then when I got it and did the reading and then you got the hardcover copy, it's just good. I mean, I'm shocked. Maybe one day it'll be like a movie property.
Yeah.
But it's a lot darker. So I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe like in the vein of The Boys, they could do it. But yeah, definitely check it out. It's one of Alan Moore's finest works, Marvel Man, aka Miracle Man. What do you got, Captain?
Actually, you talked about John Schnepp. He actually introduced me to one book too, and it's one I've been wanting to read. And there's been like some rumbling going around of a possible like, you know, converting it because he always talked about it was God Country. If you make sure you guys check
it out.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a. Really going in. But the one I have, I went two routes this week. I actually went to one. Deep, not deep, but not too deep into the DC vault. And another one I went into a Marvel vault. The Marvel one wasn't too old. But my DC one I went for, and it's a character I know about and I love when I see her, but Wonder Woman. I've really never cracked open. Like I remember the 90s Wonder Woman books. I read those, but I never got a chance to really crack open and like read a volume of Wonder Woman. And actually, I did that for Wonder Woman Gods and Mortals. It's a 1987 book of like from February to August. It's done by George Perez, writer also George Perez, Greg Potter, Len Wein. If nobody knows any of these names, you should know these names. do yourself a favor. I know Len Wein's got a book on comicology, and it just covers all of his, like, a lot of his, like, famous storylines. Do yourself a favor, read that. And of course, George Perez. You have to, should know George Perez. But basically, this is just the retelling of Wonder Woman's origins, but more based in the, like, the late 80s style. But the bulk of, like, the first part of the book really takes place back in time before Wonder Woman's even in existence. We see the gods, we see the echelon of gods talking about what they should do, how they, you know, when the Amazonians are created, and they talk about where the Amazonians were. They were a group of people that their bodies were dead, and they lived in this well of souls. And finally, these three female gods decided, you know what, Zeus is trying to fight us on this. There needs to be a equaling point to men out there, and they released these souls from the well of souls, and they became the Amazonians, and there were thousands of them, not just the island that we know of, but thousands upon thousands of them, except for one soul was left in the well of souls, and it was stayed there. They said that soul has a special purpose, and then they go about their lives and what happened and how, you know, they got screwed over by man, and then, you know, hundreds got killed, go off until they finally, you know, are like, hey, you know what, we're going to send you out. You know, the goddesses are like, we're sorry, we're going to send you out to Paradise Island. You cannot leave there. No man should leave, you know, go out there, and you will be there by yourself. Poseidon opens up the waters, and they walk across the waters and, you know, and get to the island, and then they begin to build their culture. And then, of course, you know, we get to the point where Wonder Woman is born and just becomes Wonder Woman. You know, it gets selected as the warrior. A lot of the same tropes we know, but it's a really cool book. It's a nice throwback. It's good, but it's not what I'm looking for. I was looking for a book that really delved more into Wonder Woman now, not like her origin story. So as soon as I'm done with it, finished with this.
Yeah, you should let me borrow that, because I'm all into, like, the Greek gods and, like, all that stuff.
Then you're going to love this one, dude, because like I said,
I studied that in college. I was a big Greek mythology geek.
Because you're talking, huge. It's like, I think it's seven issues. So you're talking at least the first two issues alone are just the Greek god story. And you know, there is no Wonder Woman yet. There's her mother and the other Amazonians. So
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, real fun read. It's, like I said, it's about seven books. But then you just, it's the retelling of the same trope we kind of seen. It's I think this is the one that they all actually based off Wonder Woman, the movie, off of. Just they took out the god part. Imagine the beginning part of Clash of the Titans, where you had that, where they had them up in
Olympus.
Yeah, you had that part, and then just put that with, and then have it ending with Wonder Woman. It's pretty much, you know, kind of
cool. I definitely want to check that out. And who wrote it?
That's actually a mixture. It was George Perez, Greg Potter, and Lynn.
George
it
Perez.
Perez did do the artwork on it, and it's classic Perez. I mean, just beautiful artwork.
Wait, I'll check that one out.
All right. What'd you get next?
I got one that is basically it was a limited run. It was four issues. It was created by Mark Millar. And I think I have discussed this or not. It's called Nemesis. Now, Nemesis, if you know, to put it in context of characters, you know, Nemesis is basically Batman gone bad. He's a rich dude. His name is Matt Anderson. And he just went off. He went insane. And he's highly trained and all that stuff. And he's Batman, but he's the Joker. And in this version, you have this police chief who's Blake Morrow, and Blake Morrow is the Batman character. And that's like the big dichotomy of the whole thing. Basically, Nemesis is targeting people. There's a great scene or a great panel where he goes to the Pentagon and kills 26 people. So the guy is highly trained, but he's going after this police commissioner who's just as good as a character as Nemesis is. And he basically has to battle wits with this guy for four issues, and it's really good, really detailed. I know Millar stuff got, you know, all licensed to Netflix, so I'm wondering if Nemesis is in the pipeline. I hope it is. Not sure if you read this one, Captain, but it's another good one.
I've only read a couple of Millars. I mean, primarily, you know, Kick-Ass.
This is the one you should really get into. It's four issues. It's Millar at his peak. It's very violent, too. Very violent. And both the characters of, you know, Blake Morrow, who is the commissioner, and Matt Anderson, who you find out later is Nemesis. The costume's pretty cool too. It's all white. Carries guns with him, so he's like the anti-Batman. That's the way I look at the anti-everything. Batman.
He sounds like he's Flashpoint Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. He's basically that. He's a murderer. He's a killer. And throughout these four issues, you see this police chief basically having to defend his family from this guy, because this guy has it out for him, because I guess years before this, his father was imprisoned by this same police commissioner. And apparently, like, his father didn't commit these crimes. Matt blames this police chief. That's why he's going on this killing spree. He's doing all these killings basically to get the commissioner's or the police chief's attention, so he can get him out of the way. It's really well done. I'm shocked that you haven't read this one yet.
Like I said, yeah, I've never been Millar's. I know he's. I've liked the few things I've read on him, but he's never been one. I'm like, man, I really got to delve more into him. I think lately I've been delving into more the classics. my selection. You and I actually kind of talked about this last week. I didn't get it brought up, but I'm reading The Superior Spider-Man. This is published 2013 to January 2013 to August 2014. A total of 45 issues. So there's three volumes of this. I'm just in the middle of volume one right now, but it's, you know, of course, you know, Marvel's came out. Dan Slott and Ryan Stegman were the creators, written by Dan Slott. An artist was Ryan Stegman, Humberto Ramirez, or Ramo, sorry. And so it's basically, it's a Elseworld. This is one of those things I've always been kind of icky about Spider-Man, because there's so many Spider-Man freaking books out there and you don't know which one's which. This one has nothing to do with the regular continuity. It literally, like, there's a branch off. There's a moment in Spider-Man history, the climax of, I think it's the Dying Wish storyline in Amazing Spider-Man 700. It stopped printing at that point, and then they started printing the Superior Spider-Man. And basically what happens is Peter's body is lying there dying. So Dr. Octavius takes his mind and it's the other way around. Sorry. Dr. Ock's body is laying there dying. Peter is in a coma, and he basically switches minds, does a body switch with him, or vice versa. Think of any movie where you switch your bodies and your heads, and they switch. And basically, Doc Ock decides that he is going to be a better Spider-Man. He is going to be a better Peter Parker than Parker could ever be. And he proceeds to do so. He's helped with the little bit of memory that he's able to access Peter's memory. So when he comes across somebody and he's able to, like, delve in and go, okay, this is who this person is. This is what's going on. He starts throwing out these little tiny spider robots. We've actually seen them in the Spider-Verse. The anime version of the Spider-Verse, the girl, she's got like a tiny little spider robot, I think, that runs around. And he basically makes 33 of these, and he spreads them out around his patrol route. And so that way he can now have time for Mary Jane. But Mary Jane's not sure about him. There's something just off. That's not Peter. So what he realizes he can do, he's like, hey, I've got Peter's access. I can go back and relive those intimate moments and know how to woo her, basically. Mm-hmm. But as he starts doing this, Peter's consciousness
starts waking up, right?
Starts coming through and starts talking to him. So you're watching Spider-Man and you're watching Doc Ock as Spider-Man do these things. In the meantime, you have Peter freaking out, going, well, don't touch her like that. What are you doing? Don't, you know? But there's what happens is you start seeing signs that Peter is influencing Doc Ock to now. He's not only becoming a better Spider-Man, but he's actually not doing the bad things that he would as a villain. He now has the Jiminy Cricket of sorts on his shoulder, which is Peter. And so Peter, you know, will say something and it'll hit Doc Ock, but it won't be exactly what he said, but it'll be a hint. It's almost like having a little voice, a consciousness.
What year did this come out?
2013. So it's been about 7 years now.
Never heard of this one. I think you mentioned it before.
It's not a part of the main storyline. It falls under the Spider-Verse. Spider-Verse, Spider-Geddon, War of the Realms. He's kind of on his own little world now. Mm-hmm. Because Peter did eventually die in that world. So, you know, because right now, you know, Peter's the big Elseworld character in Marvel, because you have your different versions.
And he's the only one that they've done really well with those Elseworlds. I don't think any other character can work. Like, the multiverse of Spider-Man are actually pretty cool characters. I think Into the Spider-Verse showed us that. I mean, there's a lot of cool versions of them.
And that really didn't even touch it. I mean,
it didn't. That's the crazy thing. There's more.
You really want to delve into the Spider-Verse, get into the comic books, because there's so many great stories. And then also those connect into the Spider-Geddon, which is the Armageddon.
There is a
world of.
If you recall the animated series, I'm not talking about the one that was on MTV, but the one before that, like the ending of that series was basically the multiverse of Spider-Man. Like basically the greatest villain that Madame Web was preparing him was him.
Yeah.
If you remember that was just the version of Spider-Man that basically had lost Uncle Ben. He went crazy. He succumbed to the symbiote. And he was just all powerful. And the way they had to be beaten was by one of the best moments in that show was the ending where he sees Uncle Ben. And he's like, oh my God, it's Uncle Ben. And that's the way that Peter defeated him, was he brought Uncle Ben from another timeline and said, Peter, what are you doing? This isn't you. And you could see that final scene where he's just like, he's crying on Uncle Ben. I'm teared up just thinking about it. Good Lord. But if it's along those lines, like the multiverse, I'll definitely check that out.
Well, this is just concentrating on just one verse, one universe of this. Just if you go out, like I said, there are so many Spider books out there right now. It's ridiculous. You can go and find Spider-Gwen. You can go and find Spider-Noir. And it's all books taking place in their universe. But then the Spider-Verse will come out. Spider-Geddon will come out. Looks like they're working on the Revenge of the Spider-Man. So, I mean, there are different times that these universes will collide together again. But right now they're still living in their own individual world. But it's a great storyline. I think it's a cool take on it. And just funny to see Parker walk around in the white lab coat with the goggles on top of his head, doing Doc Ock stuff when he's in the lab. But yet he's got to go out and just watching him, you know, trying to smooge, you know, trying to get into Mary Jane's pants. It's just hysterical because she's wearing like a low cut top and he's just staring straight down. She's like, hey, Tiger, you know, and he calls her Tiger back because he doesn't understand the tiger thing. So it's pretty fun. If anybody's wanting a fresh take on Spider-Man, this is something fun to take.
How many issues, by the way?
45. Like I said, this is there's three volumes.
Well, it's a long one. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's broken out into three volumes right now.
So I guess available on hardback and, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, if the volumes are out like that, it should be in hardback already.
Okay. So. I will do
but that is mine.
I got one more. And this is actually a recent one that I revisited, you know, being in quarantine, you're going to find some stuff to read. And one of my favorite runs by Scott Peterson was Batman's Kings of Fear. This was basically six issues.
Yes.
And it delves into one of the most fascinating things that I can get into, which is like Batman's relationship with fear. And basically throughout this whole run, he is poisoned by the Scarecrow. Scarecrow's got him under the fear toxin. But it's not what you think. He's not going insane. He's not crazy because Batman, strong-willed as he is, he's talking to a version of the Scarecrow in his subconscious. And his subconscious, basically, the Scarecrow is telling him, like, look, you're afraid of something. Before this is done to get you out of this, you know, poison that you're under, you're going to tell me what your greatest fear is. And throughout all the six issues, he's solving these crimes with basically the Scarecrow helping him out, which is kind of crazy, but he keeps poking the bear. Like, I know you're afraid of something. You're going to tell me. And eventually he does. I don't want to spoil what happens, but that whole dichotomy, because Batman's whole big thing is he is fear. He faced his fear to become fear, but the Scarecrow wants to know, well, you got to be afraid of something. It's not your parents, it's something else that drives you, and he wants to know. And that relationship is throughout all six issues, and he's doing this while trying to solve crimes, which I find fascinating. It's very similar to the run of, if you ever read Batman, I believe it was Venom, where he was poisoned by the Venom thing and he went insane. Not quite that, but this is more psychological, which I find fascinating. And I hope someday they can actually make this maybe to like a little series, an animated movie. I don't care. I want to see this.
Yeah, that book is good. Yeah, I've read that one. I revisited that one last year, I think, actually almost a year ago. Yeah, it's great. Just that dichotomy between him and the Scarecrow. When Batman Grave came out, the flavor of fear was in Grave. I think that's why I liked it. It
had very much.
It was more the Detective Batman that we're so used to seeing, that he's got to figure this out, and you now have a voyeur into his mind via the Scarecrow. So yeah, no, it's definitely a good book to check out. I think you said there was six books on there.
Yeah, it's six issues. It was a small run, but it was
a really good quick read. Very quick read.
Very quick. Read, yeah.
Just very, very good Batman book.
Yep.
I will give my approval on that one for sure. I don't have any others, but what I want to suggest to you guys, with a lot of downtime right now, I want you guys to go look for somebody, and I don't do this that often. I want you guys to go out onto Facebook and look for Neil Adams. If nobody knows who Neil Adams is, again, do yourself a favor, catch up on him. He is probably one of the most prolific artists still around, still producing, in fact. But during the day, I don't know if he's been doing it since quarantine or if this is something he's always done, but right now during quarantine, at least twice a day, Neil turns on his video camera. Him and I don't know if it's his wife and his daughter or something, but there's a couple of women in there. He is sketching. So you were able to watch Neil Adams do an old sketch, do a new sketch. Basically, he takes orders over the phone, over Facebook, and you watch him create this artwork. And then you can see the other artwork. It's very similar. Like if you ever went to a convention and you saw Neil's booth, he would have, you know, artwork already drawn and you can buy, you can do the same thing. It's just so fun to watch Neil draw and just the stories he tells why he's doing it. So if anybody's bored, got nothing to do, check him out. Like Monday through Friday, Monday through Thursday. I think he takes Friday off, but he does these throughout the week, and it's just fun to watch and to see the artwork he does and hear the stories he's telling, and just see it, see him. And he's always still wearing the same outfit with the tie on. I love that.
I love that too. It sounds like a version of Bob Ross painting, but with Neil Adams.
Basically, is kind of what it is. I get like sucked into it. Like I'll usually watch it during my break because I'm still working from home, and I'll just get sucked into it during break. I'm like, oh crap, I got to get that log back on because it's just watching him do this.
If it's Neil Adams, shoot, he's one of my favorite writers. He's up there along with Snyder and.
And I know Jim Lee's doing a auctioning thing for some of his own custom artwork right now too. If you guys want to jump on
that. Jim Lee did something like that. Did he do it on the DC Universe streaming service that he was there and he was drawing? I think he was drawing a panel. It was live. And they're like, Jim, what are you doing? He just sat and just doodled out like a couple panels of Batman. I'm like, oh my
God. But there was a sketch, rough sketch, black and white. He's pretty much all black and white ones, but a rough black and white sketch of like Azrael. Man, the thing was going for $5,000, but it was beautiful.
That's one of the characters I am shocked they haven't even touched on yet. They haven't even touched on Azrael. Not animated, not live action, well, any form.
But they? Gotham. They butchered the hell out of it.
Oh, that was Zeus. See, that's so bad, I don't even like to talk about that one.
Yeah. But guys, if you're just bored and you want to check out some great artwork, again, check out those two on Facebook. You'll get their pop-up saying, hey, check us, you know, Neil Adams is going live. That's, I'm always excited when I see them. Like, oh, can't wait for break. Can't wait to see what he's doing.
They're available on YouTube, correct?
I think he does Facebook Live. I'm sure maybe they have him, but no, Facebook Live.
I'll check that out after we get off
Facebook Live. And okay. He's, like I said, he's at home doodling away and just making some stuff, you know. And it reminds me a lot of times I went to reminds me a lot about when I was going to live out in LA. I went to music school, and we actually had if nobody's a musician, but there's a type of pickup that goes into a guitar, D'Addario's. We actually had D'Addario there talking about making pickups, and he was making a pickup as he was talking about how does he do it, and how does he, you know, the physical part of it, you know. And he was able to, at the very end, somebody, you know, he drew a number, and you know, the guy walked out with that pickup that he just handmade. So, you know, when I get a chance to watch like an artist do his craft like that in a very casual area, that's always great.
It's worth it. Yeah, definitely have to check that out.
All right, guys. So, well, that is the end of Heroes Asylum. Thank you guys for checking us out again, downloading, subscribing. We always appreciate it. We will be here for next week as well. We did just release the... What did we do? Shit, what was Midnight Crawl, Movies?
Crawl, man, we did Crawl. Crawl.
Thank you, God. We just did Crawl on the Midnight Movies. Fun one. If you guys need to find it, it is out there. Look for it on Tubi, and you'll be able to find it. But also, I did release our Star Wars series. So check that out, guys. That is out on heroesasylum.com for both of them. But if you need to get a hold of, you want to listen to some of the Midnight Movies, you have to find them on any of your podcast sites. And you just type in Midnight Movie. We're there. You'll see the smiling, our little character. You'll see Carlos hanging out.
Yep. Carlos is our sentient microphone, always hanging out, smiling, saving the world.
Definitely, guys, check those out. We will have a few more movies coming down the pike for you on the Midnight Movies, and just normal stuff coming out for Heroes Asylum, and hopefully some extra stuff. Right? We're getting bored now.
We're getting bored. We'll probably release some stuff. Who knows?
All right, guys. So, Kane, what do you got?
Well, as always, you can reach us at Twitter, which is Heroes Asylum Podcast. We actually change it. It is Heroes_Asylum. Check us out there. We always post some fun stuff on Twitter, news articles, all that stuff. Sometimes we put Captain Mike's face on there. It's fun. And Facebook page, our area of contact, of course. Check us out, man. I mean, we're always writing stuff on there, sharing news. I don't know. Say hello. Maybe share a comic that you guys have read or haven't read, or a graphic novel. It could be anything. Or a movie that you guys just saw. Like, hey, I just saw this movie. Post it on there. You know, share it. I mean, we're all about new opportunities and things.
Yeah,
so.
especially now.
I mean, we're getting bored.
We're up for something new.
Always have something to do. And, of course, as always, during the week, if you're absolutely bored, we have what's called, on Mondays, called What They Say. Got some new stuff coming up for What They Say. Last week, we released a cool one. And I actually got a really good one that I sent Captain Mike. You guys should check that out. Tuesday Titans. Yep. Last week was Starro. This week, going to stick in that cosmic vibe. You'll check them out. I think release of the week is going to go away for a while, so that'll be merged into something else, so don't look for that. Throwback Thursday, one of your favorite comic book runs. It could be a movie, it could be film, I have anything. Actually, I have a comic book one in mind, and as soon as the captain signs off on it, it'll be on there. Check it out. Really good run, by the way. Friday Night Fights, we put two titans against each other. Last week we had Owlman and Batman. Who are we going to have this week? Don't know, because the captain's gonna choose. And of course, Saturday is Sci-Fi Saturday. We didn't have any Sci-Fi Saturday this week, technical difficulties, but we'll do some twofers, maybe a threefers. I got another series. So check that out, our Facebook area page, Twitter and Instagram. And as always, from the captain to me to you, get to the asylum.